Well, this is Beth Smith, and I am at 132 Route talking to Alberta Mitchell. This is her home. Beautiful little house here. And she's going to tell us about her life in Salida. Alberta, where would you like to start?
Well, I guess with my birth. I was born in Salida at a house down on Oak Street. And if you don't know where Oak Street is, it's the same as 291. My dad worked for the railroad, and my mother was a homemaker. I grew up and went to school, elementary school at McRae. From there, I went to Kestner Junior High and graduated in 1944 from Salida High School. The September of 1944, I went to nurse's training at St. Anthony's Hospital in Denver, and I graduated in 1947. From then, I came back to Salida with the intent of staying here for a while. And then I was going to move on to greener pastures. I went to work at the Rio Grande Hospital, and I stayed with the hospital until 1987, when I graduated from nurse's training. Or when I resigned from the hospital. I had visions of going on to school or maybe joining the Navy Nurse Corps, but I got married instead and raised three girls.
And your husband's name?
My husband's name is Robert Burr Mitchell, known better as Bert. And he graduated from Salida High School in 1943. And spent a couple of years in the service. Then he came back to Salida and went to work for the post office. And he was with the post office until he retired in 1989.
Good. Now, you raised three children here in Salida then, too. Who are they?
You know, I think I'll correct that about Bert.
Yeah.
He retired in 1980. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. I worked 7 years after he retired. Yes, and we raised three girls, and they all graduated from Salida High.
And what were their names?
Brenna.
Can you tell
the
me
oldest
when she was
one.
Born? When was she born?
She was born in 1951. Uh-huh. And she graduated from Salida High, and she attended college at Fort Lewis for a while, and then she decided she wanted to go into cosmetology, which she did, and then she had her own shop for a while here in Salida. And then she started raising children. She got married Larry Marcus and started raising her family. She had three boys.
Fine.
And they all graduated from Salida High.
Well, you've been in Salida for a long
time. We've been in Salida for a long time. Lorraine graduated. She was born in 1953, and she graduated from Salida High, and then she went to Fort Lewis also and got her teacher certificate. And she taught for, she worked in Denver for a couple years, and she did some substitute teaching. Then she came back to Salida, and she's been a teacher at Longfellow Elementary School and still is. Mm-hmm. And she has one boy. And Marla is the baby. She was born in 1955, and she went to school in Alamosa and graduated Alamosa State College. And she then moved to Pueblo and has been working in special education in the Pueblo school system, and she's still actively employed. And she also went on and got a master's degree in psychology, so she does a lot of consultation work.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to you and Bert, and you living here in Salida and working at the hospital. Are you a particular kind of a nurse? Do you have a specialty?
Well, no, I was just a jack of all trades. When I worked at the hospital, I worked in all departments, with exception of the laundry and kitchen.
Oh,
never
good.
Worked there.
Good.
But I did floor duty. I worked OB and nursery. I worked in surgery, and I worked in the emergency room. I helped in X-ray and in lab. But when I started working, nurses kind of helped all over. But the last 20 years of my employment, I was chief nurse on second floor, medical surgical, and I also had some control over the intensive care unit, worked in there too.
Can you tell us anything particular about what happened that was interesting in the hospital?
Well, you know, when I came to work, the hospital belonged to the Rio Grande Railroad, and it was a typical hospital that you found in those days. When I started working, we worked 6 days a week, and the railroad was good to us. We were considered railroad employees, and they were good to us. The chief staff at that time was Dr. Kerfman out of Denver, who was a Salida doctor before he went on into Denver. We just seemed to have a good hospital. The hospital had a census capacity of 66 patients. And there were two floors, first floor and second floor. And I worked first floor most of the time, which was a medical ward. And we were always full, summer and winter. In fact, there were times when we had such a patient load that we put beds out in the hall. And very few people were sent out of town. Dr. Fuller was an excellent surgeon, well known in the state of Colorado. Dr. Hoover was a orthopedic specialist, and not only did he do all the orthopedic work here, he did it for Adams State College and Gunnison. He went to Fairplay and treated patients, but they all had to come here for the surgery. I always marveled how he could take a broken body and put it back together again. He was a marvelous doctor. Then, I can't remember exactly when they started remodeling the hospital. But you know, we just were like most hospitals. And Salida was known having one of the best hospitals in the state of Colorado. We took care of railroad patients from Denver all the way into Utah, where the railroad ran. Then I think it probably was in the 50s, late 50s, when the railroad men began to want to stay in their own home to go to the hospital. So the railroad made an agreement with hospitals in various places where they could stay there. Then after that, when the railroad started cutting back on their rail service to all these little towns, it was no longer a railroad hospital. Now, at that time, only railroaders and their families were patients at the hospital.
No local people?
No, they had to go, their families, the railroad and their families, all the rest of the people went to the Red Cross Hospital.
And that's over there by
Safeway. Well, the Red Cross Hospital was where the Shriner building is today. And that was a locally owned hospital. Dr. Colcombs owned the hospital and trained his own nurses. It's a nice hospital. I used to go there all the time with my mother because she and my dad were married in Leadville. Her parents had a boarding house and a saloon during the Gold Rush days.
In Pueblo?
In Leadville.
In Leadville. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
Effie Gabardi, Effie Mosco Gabardi. Mm-hmm. And she knew a lot of people that were in Leadville. And they used primarily all come down from Leadville to go to Red Cross Hospital. Mm-hmm. Then after the railroad sold the hospital, they opened it up to the public.
And they sold it to whom?
Nobody. Well, yes, they did. Some doctors in Denver wanted to buy it, and the doctors here decided that wouldn't be a good idea, so they formed the district, and that's when the district was formed.
And we still have that district.
And they still have the district, yes. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a little uncertain at the time what was going to happen to the hospital. And had a group of people within the community that the district is formed went together and put up enough money to buy it from the, at least make a big down payment on it to the railroad. Otherwise, had that not happened, we might have lost the hospital entirely.
Was there someone who spearheaded this?
Well, yeah, it was a board of directors, Ted Jacobs and John Peoples and Dr. Lenardi and a man from Howard by the name of Pease, P-E-A-S-E, Pease. I can't remember all of them. They're the ones that got together. I don't know for sure who was the big instigator, but Ted Jacobs and Mr. Godown were on the board of directors at that point, and they're the one that spearheaded this, or we, Salina might have lost the hospital. The railroad wasn't too sympathetic to the needs of the hospital, and by that time the Red Cross Hospital had already closed. So we were very fortunate that these people all got together and made a donation so they could at least get started. And from then it's progressed to where it is now.
Did you notice any differences between your Rio Grande Hospital and the one that we had that belonged to the city?
District? Well, I think after the city or the district bought the hospital, I didn't notice any difference in the governing body of the hospital, except that's when they formed then the board of directors, and the chief of staff then was here and not in Denver, where chief of staff ought to be. And I think probably, the patient load didn't change. And that we still had the same doctors. So as far as patient care, no, there was no difference. Mm-hmm. The local and surrounding railroaders from around the county, they all came here. We just lost the people that from various points like Pueblo, Colorado Springs, and Denver, Grand Junction. Mm-hmm. I don't think the care changed. I don't think anything changed until the plant changed later on. But even after it became a district, our patient load was still... it was still up in the 60s. And that's when they had the two floors. And at the end of the hall was the big solariums. Then they turned the solariums into, which I really felt bad because it was such a nice place for the patients and visitors and family to go and visit out at the end of the hall on the west end on both floors, big ones. And they turned that into a nursing home associated with the hospital. And on second floor where medical records and the pharmacy and used to be the doctors, the library, that whole wing there was two big wards. And most of those wards, I think there was, several beds in either ward. I can't remember exactly how many, but they were primarily retired and older railroad men. And then the hospital made that into a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And it was just really nice to have the nursing home in connection with the hospital. I know I had my mother down there. It was just very nice. Mm-hmm. And it was always full. We never had any empty beds. And if we did, it wasn't for very long. And they never sent people out. You know, Dr. Hoover did all the orthopedic work. I remember one time when they had a plane crash, and when they brought the pilot in, I didn't think they'd ever get him put together, but they did. And he lived and left and came back to visit us two or three times after that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
He had a fight with the big mountain on Monarch, and the mountain won.
Oh, yes.
The mountain
It wins sometimes, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Was that the plane crash that killed George Everett?
No.
No,
there's
another one.
No.
All right. I suppose in this area we have had a few.
I can't remember, but it seems to me like this pilot was alone. Oh. Mm-hmm. And he didn't realize before he started that Monarch was as
high
as it is.
Right.
It was too late for him to turn around. So, but we kept everybody here occasionally. Very seldom did we ever send anybody out. The doctors were very well-rounded, skillful people. Kept them here.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was a hospital auxiliary formed very early. Do you know about that?
Yeah, the hospital auxiliary, and I can't remember for sure when it was formed. I think probably some of the instigators of this was Dr. Sandell's wife, Mary Jill, and... I just can't remember exactly when it all got started, but I can't say enough about how much they have contributed to the hospital and the patients in the hospital. They've contributed an awful lot of money that was used to buy equipment and... And they were a big help when I was working. Nurses used to do everything. It was the day before nurses were more of administrative type workers than nursing. You know, we took care of patients. We bathed, we gave them, got them up, we did all the treatments, I used to do all the IVs in the hospital. We had aides, and we had such a good bunch of aides. They were just, I can't talk enough about them either, because they, a good bunch of aides, are absolutely worth their weight in gold when it comes to patient care. But there were an awful lot of things that the auxiliary used to do, and I suppose they still do, taking patients to the room and taking them out for dismissal and getting things for the patients and fixing their flowers and cleaning the room up a little bit and reading to them and maybe writing letters for them and taking them for little walks if, you know, the patient could. And yeah, they were worth their salt and gold, as the aides were. Like, we couldn't have done it without them. When I started working in 1947, they had an organization here called the Gray Ladies. And they would come in and do nursing care when we needed them. Frances Bradford and Lorraine Grunler and Lova Ramey are three of them that we just called on constantly. And they would come in. They were trained. I think they might have been Red Cross trained. I'm not sure. But they were trained, and, you know, we'd call them in. You just went to work and hoped nobody was sick. And if they were sick, everybody just pitched in and got everything done and hoped tomorrow would be better. But they used to come in, and they did a lot of things like the auxiliary did, but they did actual patient care. Mm-hmm. They were marvelous women.
Good. Mm-hmm. We need them.
Yeah, we need them. And, you know, I look back, we never locked the hospital. I think we locked the front door after visiting ours, but there was a door that faces the east and the other one facing the north. We never locked the hospital. We didn't have any trouble. Sometimes maybe somebody who had too much to drink would get kind of confused and get wandering around, but you could take them out. They didn't give you any trouble, but it was a good place to work. We had a lot of fun. We worked hard. We had a great bunch of nurses. It was a fun place to work.
How did your pay scale compare
with
Pueblo?
Well, when I started to work, I think I probably was making, I was lucky if I was making $200 a month. This was the best paid. The nurses received more pay in this hospital than they did in the state. There was never a shortage of nurses. Nurses wanted to come here because the pay was so much better.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Mm-hmm. And we never had a shortage. We had nurses coming from all over. And they liked to, you know, a lot of them were, even the younger women liked to come because they wanted to ski and they liked the area. There was good turnover because, you know, these young gals would come, and I think a lot of them were looking for husbands, and there wasn't that, there weren't enough young men around. But we always had an ample supply.
Can you remember any epidemics or any something?
No, I don't think so. Not epidemics. I got into that in Denver, but I don't remember it. We had the usual winter stuff, the pneumonias and the flu. But I can't remember any epidemics like they had in the previous years. No, I think it just seemed like the seasonal things we had, but not enough that you would call it an epidemic.
Well, now you and Bert were active in the community, too.
Yeah, Bert more so than me for a long time. Bert started at the post office as a mail carrier. He was active in the American Legion. He was an active member of the Drum and Bugle Corps. You remember the Drum and Bugle Corps?
No, I don't.
Oh, I think they had about 30 or more members of the men that were in World War II. And when they came back to Salida, where the swimming pool is now was still there, but they had all that vacant in the back. And there were a lot of Quonset huts out there. And all these guys got together. They were all members of the Legion. They all got together and formed the Drum and Bugle Corps. And they had a real classy a corps. And they performed in celebrations all over the state whenever they would have, like, and the boat race here when they would have that. And they took part in competitions. They were real good. Now, I might have a picture or can get a picture of the Drum and Bugle Corps because I have a picture of them in their dress uniforms. And then at night, during the boat race days or wherever they'd go, like to Leadville for boom days and stuff, at night they always had what they call the shirt tail parade, and they'd get dressed in crazy outfits and march up and down.
That was fun.
Oh, those guys really knew how to have fun. Mm-hmm. And after Bert and I got married, they were always going somewhere, and they'd get together, and they'd drink a little beer, but they really knew how to have fun. Yes, it was a marvelous organization. Oh, God, they used to do some of the dumbest things, but it was all in good fun. Nobody ever got hurt. Nobody ever got in a fight. I just really feel too bad that some of our younger people don't know how to have fun.
You talked about some of the dumbest things. What are you talking about?
Oh, when Bert and I got married, you know, the Y&R garage used to be downtown where it was on Air Street. I think it was probably on the third or second and a half. I can't remember exactly. It's a big garage where you drove inside, not inside, but they had, you drove at a cover where the gas pumps were, and they did a lot of car works. And they sold cars.
Do you know who owned that?
Yeah, Mr. Young. People by the name of Young,
mm-hmm.
and
Roy.
Roy Young. Mm-hmm. They had that. And it's, I think he was in there with a brother. But anyway, they were the Drum and Bugle was having their, well, they had a parade. It was early in the evening. And Bert and I had been married just a couple of weeks. And as they were marching down, I saw him kind of wave, you know, wave at me. And I thought he was waving, so I waved back. Well, I went into the Y&R garage, and I thought, well, now what are they going in the garage for? And when they come out, they found the old green bathtub. I have no idea where they found it. And they put it on a pull cart, and they put Bert in it, and while they were putting him in, a couple of the members come over and picked me up and put me in, and we were all over town in the bathtub on wheels. And then after that, every time they went out to perform, somehow they always put it on a trailer and took it wherever they went. And the last place they left it was in the Vendome Hotel. in Leadville. And I don't know how they ever got it up there on the third floor, but they did, you know. And when they would go to perform after it got dark, that's usually when they perform, they would walk in the bar, all the different lounges and bars or whatever it had, and they beat the drums until they got a drink. And with that many people in there beating the drum, it didn't take long for the bartender to set up the drinks.
Oh. Sounds like fun.
It really was. They had a lot of fun. I was just looking at the picture not too long ago. Most of the guys are gone up. John Hill belonged to that. Boy, he was right out with the rest of them. And several guys that worked at the post office. I have a picture. I'll see if I can't get
the
it.
The library would like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think he would. Yeah. It was part of them. Then Bert belonged to the Elks. Was not too active in there, but he was a member. He had his 50-year pin, and he then started playing golf, and he was the president or the Salida Golf Club for one or two years. Served on the school board. And after he quit or retired from the post office, he got his real estate license to do appraisals. He had to go to school at Collie University, and then he had spent a few days out in California to get his appraisal certificate. And after that, he was appointed to the board of directors for the what was then the Salida Building and Loan. And I can't remember what year that was, but he was the chairman of the board for a couple of years. Still was the chairman when he died.
When did he die?
2001. Mm-hmm. He was a big instigator in getting this bank going.
The High Country Bank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When he was elected to the board, it was still downtown.
On 2nd Street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had just moved over on 2nd Street. And yes, he was, and he was very active in the Episcopal Church. He joined the Episcopal Church probably in the middle 50s, mid-1950. I was born and raised a Roman, and a Roman Catholic, and his mother was a First Baptist, but then we both joined the Episcopal Church when Father Smith was here, and Bert was very active in the church. Mm-hmm. So he was pretty active in the community. After I retired, I joined the Hospital Auxiliary, and I was there about 10 years. I belonged to the Epsilon Sigma Alpha for about 10 years. And then I was on the auxiliary for about 10 years. And then after the girls grew up, I joined the golf club and I played golf. And for the last several years, I've been doing volunteer work at Longfellow School.
Great.
I go there for 4 mornings a week.
Mm-hmm. A little community like this needs lots of volunteers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The little kids are so cute. One of them said to me the other day, they were going out the door, and he said, "Goodbye, Miss." "Oh," he said, "you're not a missus, you're a grandma."
That's fun.
Yeah. But I was active in the semi-active in the Nurses Association for a while. And I've been very active in the church for the last, probably 10, 12 years. play a lot of bridge, so I keep busy.
Keep that mind active. Can you think back over the years of the changes that have happened to Salida while you've been here?
Yeah. Some of them have been good, some of them have not been good. As a little girl when I was growing up, and even through high school, even up until the railroad left. And then, really, after climax shut down, there were more stores in this town. There were half a dozen dress shops. There were places like Golden Rule and Everybody's and Cruise Bags. You could buy anything. Grocery stores. I can remember, City Market. At first it was Vaughn's and City Market and Boys Market and Star Market and Randall's Market and Kylie's Meat Market and Calloway's Meat Market. You can't believe how it just breaks my heart that right now there's hardly any just stores. They're gift shops and galleries and stuff, but you had a choice of any grocery store, any dress store you wanted. And I always felt bad when they tore down the Presbyterian Church that used to
when
be...
When was that?
Gosh, I don't know. Bert and I was married in 1950, and it was still then, so it was in the early 50s. You know, it's right downtown on the corner where that... right next to Cruise Bags is where it was. It was a beautiful church, and I always felt bad that they tore that down. But by the same token, where the senior center is now, there was a kind of a S-shaped fish pond. And it was a great attraction for the local people, but a lot of the visitors, and in the summertime, they had several big trout that used to swim around in there. And I think it's a shame that they tore that down. It needed repairing, but I just think it was such an attraction that it's too bad they got rid of it. We used to go to town. It was fun. They had places around it where you could stand up on a piece of cement and watch the fish go back and forth. They had little kind of a spray fountain-like on one end. This is a tear-down, throw-away country.
I guess it is. That's what they call progress.
Yeah. And, of course, go out on Highway 50, once you got beyond G Street, you were out in the country. Yeah, there wasn't hardly anything out there. And up here on the mesa, there were just a few houses, like Dr. Larmer's house, and two great big brick houses up here. But this was pretty vacant all the way up here. And let's see, what else can I think about the town? It was too bad when they took the railroad away. I can still remember the Monte Cristo Hotel. And my mother and dad owned a bakery in Mount Rose. And my mother was the businesswoman of the family, so to speak. And she would have to go over there periodically. We'd take the narrow gauge, and I always went with her. And then we went to Leadville a lot. Neither my mother or father drive. They had a car, but that was for the two boys. And when they left home, the car just sat. So we'd go to Leadville a lot on the train. And when I was little, they had a passenger train east and west in the morning and one in the afternoon. So they had four passenger trains going by. And I loved that little depot. I can remember how quaint it was. You walk, you could hear your footsteps, and it had that odor of a wooden building and benches around. I just thought it was kind of neat. I liked to go there. And I can remember that. I remember doing a lot of traveling on the train. Of course, we had free passes because my dad worked on the railroad, and I had a free pass when I worked as a nurse. I've never been over the Roar Gorge, and I have no intention of ever going in there. I don't like high places, but I can't tell you how many times I was under it. And my mother, you know, my brothers and sisters by then had grown up because they were quite a bit older than me. And they lived, one of them lived in Grand Junction, and had a sister lived in Denver. My mother would take me down when I was just a little bit of a kid and put me on the train, tell the conductor where I was going. They would just see that I didn't get off anywhere between here and there. And let's see, what else can I think? I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, where you...
It's just changed, and a lot of it is for the good, but I still would wish we had a few of the old landmarks. I miss the whistle on the railroad.
Where was that?
Oh, it was down where the roundhouse was, mm-hmm. And they blew the whistle at 6 o'clock, and they blew it at 7, and you always knew when it was noon, the whistle blew. And I think they blew it again at 4 or maybe 5. And it was just part of
the town.
Yeah. Nobody complained. Well, we had a couple of what they used to call externs. They were med students who come here and work along with the doctors, and a couple of them. They had a place... I think it's where the nurses' lounge is on second floor now. As you come off of the elevator, you make a left turn. They had rooms down there where the externs could sleep. And they used to complain because the whistle, you know, isn't too far from the hospital. You blow them right out of bed. Yeah, there were a lot of things that I remember as a kid that I kind of miss.
Did you take part in any of the skiing or skating? Or
no, I was kind of a klutz when it came to things like that. I was doing as best I could to stay on my feet. When I was young, growing up, of course, like I said, we didn't have a car, and Monarch was nothing for a long time, and then I think they had a family by the name of Berry's kind of started it, but it was wasn't very easy to get there. I did try to skate a little bit. They had the neatest skating pond behind Helen Case lives today on Highway 50, out where you used to live on the highway. You remember where Albright's lived?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Albright was Helen Case's father. And you went back down their house, and a great big skating pond there. It was pretty neat. We used to go there, and I had been out there a few times. But like I said, I never was very athletic. It was such a struggle for me to learn to play golf. But it was a real neat place. And, of course, the weather was different, too.
Well, why is it different?
We had four seasons. you knew exactly when the seasons were. We had four distinct seasons. And my dad, we had a big yard where I lived down on Oak Street, and he raised the most, it was the best garden you ever want to see. It was a big garden, and he did it all by hand. And I used to gripe and complain, tell my mother, when I grow up, I'm going to eat beans out of a can. Well, I give beans out of the garden. Because we'd go out in the garden and cut off a head of lettuce or pick some beans or some peas or whatever we wanted to, wash it off and eat it. Winter started in October, and let me tell you, they were cold. And I've got some pictures of my mother where the snow was this high.
They're worse than they were now.
Yes. We had cold weather, and I can remember coming home from school, and it was so cold, and we had snow. Of course, we had a coal stove and a coal heater. And boy, when you got out of bed, you want to hurry to the kitchen or the front room where the fire was going, let me tell you. And then in the spring, we had distinct springs. We don't have springs anymore. And my dad always kind of got the ground ready around the 17th of St. Patrick's Day, I think is when he used to. There was an old fella in town that had a team of horses, and our yard was big enough. He would come down and plow up the yard, and I just thought that was real neat, because I got to ride on his horses, and that was in the spring. And then the summers were, they were nice summers, and every day, it just seemed like every afternoon we had a little shower. And I can remember over here around Tenderfoot, as I'm facing Tenderfoot now to the right, as you come up the highway, make that curve to go up by the hospital, was what would know now as a motel, but they used to call it cottage camp. We used to have a lot of flash floods, and my mother would always let me run down the highway to that, where that cottage camp, watch all the debris coming down from the mountain. We had a lot of flash floods over around there. But it just seemed like in the afternoons, we'd, not a long shower, but we always had showers. Everything, even Mother Nature, has changed.
How about the wind? Did you have much wind back then?
No. March. We always had a lot of wind in March. I'd go to bed at night, not sure the house would be there in the morning. We had a lot, but we never had it in the daytime, in the other months. Little breezes in the afternoon, but I never did get up to see the wind blowing like I did now.
Mm-hmm. Changes.
Mm-hmm. But it was it's just real listening. Oh gosh, I can remember going with my mother or my dad and brother out and climbing around the hills, the foothills over here, and snow clear up to my fanny with the looking for Christmas trees, because you could go out and just cut them down wherever you wanted to. And my dad loved Christmas, and we'd tramp all over the foothills until they found the perfect trees. So, yeah, I have a lot of good memories.
That's good.
I have a lot of good memories at the hospital. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed working there, and a lot of real good memories at the hospital.
Well, thank you very much, Alberta. You've really covered the situation for us here.
Well, when you live here this long, you know, and work here, I think it makes a difference when you come back and work. Mm-hmm. When I quit work in 1987, I worked 40 years. I used to walk a lot, and I bet out of every 10 cars that passed me, I knew 9. Now I'm lucky to know one.
Change it.
I feel a little bit like an alien in my own hometown.
Well, you did a wonderful job of explaining to us.